Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Karen Tynan, and I'm a counsel here in Sacramento, California. And today, again, we have Kevin Bland, a shareholder from the Orange County office. Our podcast is a great resource for trade groups, safety professionals, and any general counsel for large companies who are interested in the California safety regulation rulemaking. This is a little known area of the law that has tremendous impact on California businesses. So, Kevin, you've been involved with this for, is it more than 10 years?
Yeah, like way more than 10. 2001 was when I started the rulemaking and getting involved with advisory committees.
So let's give people a sense of how the rulemaking process starts. So take us through how California, the Standards Board, starts taking a look at the need for a new rule or modifying one of our regulations.
Sure. And there's several avenues here of how this can be done. One that is initiated by CalOSHA, the division. Let's talk a little bit about, we're going to talk about the Standards Board. The Standards Board is a completely separate entity. It's members that are appointed by the governor, made up of public members, labor members, business members, a health member, a safety member, etc. And this board meets once a month somewhere in the state, third Thursday of every month. That's actually where the rulemaking takes place within that. Now, within that whole process, CalOSHA themselves have some involvement. Stakeholder groups, such as like my trade associations I represent, have participate in them, and so do other interested parties. Labor is also involved.
Sometimes unions will be involved, right?
That's what I meant by labor, unions. However, there's really three basic ways that a rule is made. One is a Form 9. That's where CalOSHA says there is a gap in the regulation in which we need to have a new rule. The other is driven by a petition. And most of the time, a petition is a private party or a private entity. Usually it's by a trade association or by a labor union that will petition for a new regulation, a regulation to be changed or what have you. And then the third is what's called a Horcher adoption. And Horcher, that term is just the last name of whoever started this thing. So means nothing, but a Horcher adoption is when the FedOSHA has created a regulation, a new regulation or changed a regulation, or has found that they have a regulation that California does not have one that is at least as effective as their regulation. And so then they will have California, based on the Horcher process, adopt a regulation that is at least as effective. Now, I'm using those terms very carefully.
They're terms of art, actually, right,
yeah,
Kevin?
Correct. At least as effective. Now, that I didn't say the same as, right? And I intentionally didn't see the same as. And we see this pendulum over the years of 20 years of doing this. Now, this pendulum has kind of swung under the Obama administration to same as.
Exactly the same as, would you say?
Correct, yes. Okay. And then before, they would swing the other way where at least as effective as. So you can have one that is similar but more effective. Now, determining whether something's more effective, that's also at issue.
So let's talk about the Standards Board and this process. So let's say someone submits a petition, and you and I have been involved with this, submits a petition to the Standards Board and says, hey, we need a new regulation for housekeepers. This is a real life example, happened a few years ago. What happens next?
Well, they will submit the petition, and then in the context of if it's health oriented, CalOSHA takes that and puts together what they think is a proposed, maybe does an advisory committee. I'll explain what an advisory committee is an advisory committee is a group of stakeholders that are brought into a room to discuss what the rules should be and try to come to a consensus. It should be made up primarily of equal parts, labor, which is union, management, some division, experts, other stakeholders, trade associations.
And the workers are involved too, which
and
is
workers,
fair.
Yes.
Totally fair.
Yes. And so it's usually chaired if it's on the health side. The example you brought up has a little bit of health and a little bit of, so it's a more complicated example. So the division, meaning Kalosha, takes this room, then they turn it over to the standards board and they have their input and their staff and they do their tweaking to it. And this goes back and forth and bounces back and forth. And at this point, with this petition, and the petition has been approved for rulemaking and they're doing advisory committee, the actual official rulemaking still hadn't even started yet. This is all pre-rulemaking.
So these advisory committees, I want you to talk a little bit about that, because I like for big companies, clients, their trade groups to be involved in these advisory committees.
It's very important, I think, back to your original question. Why do we need the business community and the trade associations to start to come to these? I go to these regularly every month, and we call them usual suspects. There's a group of us that represent different trade associations and go. But when it comes time for a rule that's going to affect an industry or one of those directly, they want to hear meaning the board, they want to hear from the real people that are affected by it. The truck driver, the business owner, and the non-lobbyist.
The agriculture grower.
Right.
The nurses. And these meetings, it's important to say in this podcast, the notice for the meetings are online. You just go on the DIR website, then you go find the OSHA Standards Board. You can see the monthly meetings. They post the agenda because they're required to, because they're part of the California state government, right?
Correct.
So you can see the agenda for the meeting. You can see the minutes for the prior meetings. So I think it's important for listeners to understand that you can be proactive in this process and you can be informed by taking the time to go online and see the subject matter of these meetings, what's going to be discussed, whether these stakeholders are involved, and take your own opportunity to be involved with your counsel or your safety professional and make sure that your voice is heard.
Exactly. And there's another important thing that I think gets lost in this sometimes too, is that safety is important year round, every day, every year. And so this is not a bad place for your safety professional, you as a company representative or a trade association, to just attend, to watch, to listen, because I see this so often that where they will only show up when it's something that directly affects them and they don't have the same voice because, one, they haven't watched it and seen how it works and the little ends. Like I said back in an earlier podcast, a lot of this is art.
Right.
Not science. And so I encourage that. One of my associations that I represent, I have a rule, is that it's kind of funny, tongue in cheek, is that they will have a tendency. I'm going to pound on the table. I know it's going to suit her, but they'll go, just go up there and tell them, no, we're not doing it. And I said, great, come to the next meeting with me. And then they see how it works, right? It's not so easy. You have to finesse. You have to come up with compromise. The part that fascinates me is that at the end of the day, usually it's, and especially in construction, labor and management have the same goal. We're usually not at odds, but oftentimes it's the division or someone else out here that has the thing. We want to get to the same point. It's just we're trying to figure out which highway we're taking. And so if you can get it narrowed down to, okay, we're going to be on the same highway. We're going to get to the same goal. Let's make it to where, one, it can be complied with. Because if it can't be complied with, no one's going to comply with it. If they're not complying with the current rule and you make it stricter, why do you think everybody all of a sudden, oh, great, it's stricter, we're going to start complying now? If the issue is, oh, they're not following the current rule. Let's make a new rule. Unacceptable, right? But we hear this argument all the time. The other argument that some of the business side happen to make all the, it's too expensive. It's too, that old saw never, right. never resonates.
No, I hate that.
Yeah. You got to talk about what's feasible, and feasibility has nothing to define, but what's feasible, and get with the workers. I think you talked about the real folks that are on the street. I'll use my example when I was an iron worker. If it made sense to me what they're asking me to do, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to work safer, and I'm going to work safe. But if you say, do this just because I said to do it, and it makes no sense to me, chances are I'm probably not going to do it.
Right, the regular person.
Yes. So you have to have buy-in from the bottom, and you have to have buy-in from the top. And the same thing goes in this rulemaking and the advisory committees. It's amazing. That's one thing about California. This advisory committee process is kind of like their crown jewel, as long as they don't mess it up, is that it brings people to the table. We get to hear about all the different, and we talk through those issues. We may not always agree, but we do reach a consensus. And so at the end of the day, when it comes time for the rulemaking to start, notice and comment, we've already agreed what's going to happen. There may be an outlier here or there, but we move down the road. We get a rule that can be complied with and a rule that can be enforced. We don't end up all this time spent in hearings about what the rule was supposed to be, right?
Right.
And so I think it's invaluable for people to participate in the rulemaking process and the advisory committee. And it's a chance to mold the future. This is everything, our podcast up to this point, something already happened and somebody already messed up. This is an opportunity to do something for safety before an accident has occurred, before something has gone south. And you don't have to be adversarial in the room.
And we've seen this, Kevin. You know, we're looking at wildfire smoke proposals, nighttime agriculture rules. We've had housekeeping rules come down. Some bloodborne pathogen regulations were looked at a few years ago that you and I were involved with. And when we go to these standards board meetings, I notice that there's great representation from the chamber, Cal Chamber. We see the Cal OSHA reporter there. We see other safety professionals. We see the trade organizations, unions. It is a chance also when you go to those meetings, I think, to do, I wouldn't call it so much networking, but building that collegiality you talked about, building bridges, and also sharing your expertise, right? If someone is an expert on medical issues or an iron worker, or someone is a medical expert on bloodborne pathogens, those meetings are invaluable for you to attend. That's what I really want our listeners to understand.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it gives you a glimpse into the future, because as a business person, you want to be able to plan for what potentially can be coming down the road. And that's where this is the first place you're going to hear it. You may hear about something that is nothing more than, hey, we got this petition. It's going to be heard 5 months or 6 months from now. It's on chippers, and they want, and it's about putting, you know, magnets on the people loading the chippers. What do you think? Is it going to work? Is it not going to work? Is that feasible? Is it not? Get a chance even before it gets to that point to have some discussion and dialogue. The standards board themselves and the staff, I think, for the most part, works very hard to get things right, to make sure things are fair, reasonable, enforceable. The APA, the Administrative Procedure Act, has all of these little bullet points that they have to go through in order for a regulation to be enforceable. And they do a pretty good job of trying to go through it. I think where I see the hardest issues is whenever they try to make this one size fits all. If it's a construction regulation, 9 times out of 10, we sit in that room. We're there. We may be there 8 hours. We got labor, management, a few division folks, and we hammer it out and we get it done, and it affects us, and we can live with the outcome. Labor can live with the outcome. Division can enforce it. But it's the one where it's general industry.
Absolutely.
Indoor heat illness or the wildfire, right? what everybody has a different stake in that outcome. And, but the one size does not fit all, because in those situations like the wildfire with the emergency regulation, it's an emergency regulation about an emergency. And so then to try to have people go through all of the steps that are required, if it wasn't an emergency, you're never going to get people protected. They may not be perfectly protected, but it's better than nothing, because you can't follow that. So that's where that dialogue and that discussion and having people kind of undig their heels in on this perfection to where you can have a good regulation in an emergency situation. But that takes that communication. And that's what the rulemaking, to me, that's the bread and butter of the rulemaking, where you can come up with something that will work effectively for the majority of folks.
Right. And I think we see this in the nighttime agriculture regulation. We're going to apply nighttime agriculture regulations to everybody, from people picking grapes to livestock, because of the way agriculture is worded. So poultry industry, not just picking grapes, but other fruits and vegetables that have different methods. And so I know that you and I have been going to these meetings, and it's tough because these industries have very specific machinery, very specific operations, and very specific ways that they work at night. And there is kind of a one-size-fits-all mentality that broadly comes, not intentionally from the standards board, but just happens. And then you have individuals show up and say, but wait, that doesn't work for me. Don't you understand how I pick grapes?
Right. And then I call it the unintended consequences of regulations too, because oftentimes they don't even know about an industry and a process that's out there. But once it's a general industry regulation, it applies. I don't care whether you are painting toenails or building bridges or, you know, furnishing offices, it applies to you. And every one of those have different things they have to go through. And so that's why I think it's so important. I think go back where you started with this was, why do people need to be involved in this? Because without that, you're not going to be aware, and you're not going to get. And sometimes the regulation passes, you hear about it 6 months later, and you go, oh my God, how can I follow this? How can I do this?
And it's a day late and a dollar short.
And then the answer is, oh, get a variance. And then a variance, there's another misnomer. I know this wasn't about variances, but just a quick snapshot.
No, I want you to talk for 2 minutes about variances, and I'm going to agree with 100% of what you say.
Okay. So a variance. People say, oh, well, we can just do what we need to do with a variance. Well, first of all, it's only company specific. You can't, like a trade association can't get a variance for all their members. It's specific to that. And you have to be able to show what you're doing is as effective of what the regulation is. And that's a high standard. One of the most common ones that illustrates how silly this variance process is, elevators. The regulation is outdated. It has, it says wire rope with this lay count and this diameter and all that. Wire rope's the key word there. Well, they came out with a synthetic rope that's stronger, lasts longer, more effective, safer. So every building that has a new elevator in it, because the regulation hasn't caught up, has to get its own variants, hundreds of these things a year, to be able to comply, because the technology has advanced. And so you see that happen so often whenever you're sitting in this advisory committee, and then you don't even think about it.
And I see that sometimes, either an inspector or what we've called in our other podcast, a dabbler, will see, oh, you know, you can get variances. That's just what we'll do, right? Because there is quite a bit online about it. And I frankly, in all my years, I've never once recommended that we take a variance tack, that be our business strategy for regulation. And I've never once peripherally seen it be successful for a business. You're agreeing with me.
Yeah, I have not. The closest thing to a variance that I saw successful is where we've entered into what's called a special order, which is a settlement.
Right.
Yeah, and that special order becomes your law. It's not a variance, but you follow that because there's not a regulation that applies to that particular activity. But That's another podcast.
That's another podcast. We'll save that one for the next series. So I want to give our listeners an idea of the time frame from start to finish on these writing, adopting the regulations. Because as I've said in our other podcast, Kevin, Lady Justice rides a slow horse, right? Yes, none of this happens quickly.
I thought it was a donkey, but go ahead.
So let's talk a little bit about time frames so people understand how long and laborious this process is.
Yes. Okay. So there are specific time frames by statute, but they kick in late. So I've seen ergonomics was an example. That was a 10, 12 year process trying to get a regulation, and I don't even think it ended up falling into a regulation. Most of the time, if it's a fairly straightforward issue and not very controversial, you can maybe get it done in a couple years, 2-3 years. If it's
maybe.
Yes. If it's something that's controversial, you may have 5, 6, 7, 8 years worth of this. Now, here's the irony of it is that at the end of the day, the rulemaking process itself, when it becomes official rulemaking, it's you get a 45-day notice. You have a hearing within that 45 days. No changes occur. Then following month, there'll be a vote, and it will go to the Office of Administrative Law. They can do. They get 30 days to review it, and then it can become law. So the quickest, if everything was perfect, in a perfect world, is probably about 5, 6, 7 months. But the standard, in my experience, anecdotally, is 5, 6 years. So it's not, and that's another trick that they'll say, well, we don't have to get this right, perfect right now. We can do that. We can always just go back to rulemaking and change it. We hear this in this emergency regulation, right? You got to get it right the first time.
I agree with you.
And so that's a problem.
I think that, and I've heard this along with you, the idea of, oh, well, we'll pass this regulation and we'll see how it goes, and then maybe we'll come back and fix it. I never agree to anything about that as a foundational argument. And I'm like you, I want to get it right for the vast, especially if it's a general industry regulation, I want to get it right for the vast majority of the businesses in California.
And then one other caveat in here for us is that we're not lobbyists. We don't lobby for this. We act as a subject matter expert because, well, for me, example, my background in construction, general engineering contractor, crane industry, all of those things are subject matter expertise that I can bring to the table, plus all the safety experience. Same thing with Karen. With
marine all terminals, the all yeah. that, yeah.
Yeah, so we don't lobby. We set on these advisories as a subject matter expert and leave the lobbyists to do their thing.
Right. So we'll close this out. We have other great podcasts that Kevin and I have created. We have introductory podcast, California Workplace Safety. We have a terrific podcast on serious accidents with fatalities discussed. And we also have a very detailed podcast on California OSHA hearings, kind of giving the basics for California employers. Thanks so much. And once again, say bye, Kevin.
Bye, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.